It's time to get organized with Dr. Craig and Citizen Action. Working for democracy and taking on economic, racial, and environmental issues across Wisconsin and around the United States, here's Earl Ingram with Dr. Robert Craig.
All right, welcome back to What's Going On with Earl Ingram. And, you know, it's a new year. And, you know, as, you know, we all go into a new year and we hope springs eternal is the old axiom. And so we get really excited about it. We celebrate the new year coming in and we kind of wave goodbye to the old going out. And you know, that's kind of the excitement of going into a new year. And so hope, again, springs eternal that things are going to get better. Never mind about the past. The past is gone. The future is before us. And so with that having been said, it is my honor and privilege to have the one and only Dr. Robert Craig, Executive Director of Citizen Action, on the docket again. And it is really good to see you, Dr. Craig. It's you and I have been doing this for a while, and I just think that at this point in time, this is probably one of the most somber times that you and I have ever had to broach over the airwaves.
Well, it's absolutely a time of consequences and things happening that people thought were unimaginable. There's been a tendency to believe in our American history and perpetual progress. And this is certainly proof that that is not inevitable, that if there's an arc of history that can be bent towards justice, we have to bend it there. It will not bend there naturally.
You know, Dr. Craig, for people who may not know, you're a political historian of high regard. And so, you know, my conversations with you are always the kind of conversation that makes me think, that makes me realize that there's certainly something that Americans need to be doing, and not just the fact that we live in this nation, but we have a duty and a responsibility. The nation's not going to move in a direction that we want it to unless we are willing to get engaged. And so with that having been said, as we enter 2026, Dr. Craig, you and Citizen Action, all of us have a great responsibility, but today probably more so than ever. What are some of the real plans of Citizen Action this coming year with all the different elections that are coming up statewide, national? Your thoughts?
So my analysis and our analysis at Citizen Action in Wisconsin is that there absolutely is a threat to democracy. I think most of your listeners would agree. But it is at two levels. It's a two-front war. There's the attack on its basic mechanisms, like fair elections, like checks and balances, like courts that actually do their jobs, right? Like the U.S. Supreme Court.
Right.
Like, does Congress have to declare wars? We could go on and on. Can the president just close agencies that were authorized and funded by Congress with impunity? All of that. But there's another level. The reason we're even here and having a leader like Donald Trump is there's a deeper problem with democracy, and that is it's stopped delivering for average people. And so people either one group of people that in outrage at the system being rigged against them, at the circumstances of themselves, their families and their communities and their perception that things are getting worse and harder or that they can't afford life, turn away in anger, listen to the calls that it's someone else's fault, the scapegoating that is at the heart of MAGA. But then there's another group of people who just don't have a stake in democracy and don't participate and say, well, it has nothing to do with me. I'm sick of what all these politicians say. And the Democratic politicians make big promises. So do the Republicans, and nothing happens. So it has nothing to do with me. Right. And so that is how we get here, how we get to a situation where you could elect someone like a Donald Trump. And he did not win the 2020 election, as we know, and tried to steal it. We just passed January 6th. But that's now contested history, now that his side is commemorating as a day of love, when it was the day of insurrection that attempted a violent overthrow of a constitutional process. and he pardoned, you know, undermined rule of law tremendously by pardoning all of those people. You have that going on, but it's very interesting that what's happened in terms of the democracy failing to deliver, this is not the first time it's happened in American history, Earl. Over the last, since the early 1980s, the economy has been changed deliberately, very directly, by the ultra wealthy, by large corporations. The term for it is neoliberalism. But the tax code and the economy with global corporate trade agreements that undermine workers, deunionization, a whole lot of other moves has rigged the economy where we've had unprecedented growth. We've had more growth and wealth produced in the last 50 years than we did in the post-World War II period. But in the post-World War II period up to the late 1970s, it was distributed relatively evenly where working people and middle-class people also benefited. And you were a unionized worker, a young African-American man that was able to get a good union manufacturing job and make a living for yourself and your family. Yes. That was taken away. And you could just, there's a whole lot of other things. And then the tax code is rigged at the same time. So there was an analysis by Harold Meyerson in the American Prospect in the December issue that about $70 trillion, I think, a huge amount of money has been expropriated. If we had redistributed income the way we did from the late 40s to the 1970s to now, that's how much money was taken away. Each household would be $28,000 wealthier in terms of their annual income. Wow. If we had distribution of income like the 1970s. So affordability isn't just that there's been inflation. It's that people's wages are depressed. It's the combination of the two. But it's gone way up the income scale where 80% of people, so not just working class folks, but middle and even upper middle class folks, have lost ground. It's called a K-shaped economy. In a K-shaped economy, only the very top does well, right? Well, that is what's driving the crisis on grocery costs, energy costs, healthcare costs. The other thing that's driving it is they've allowed all these monopolies to take control of these industries. So hospital monopolies, big pharmaceutical monopolies, big food monopolies, the big utilities to have a government mandated monopoly, and they're jacking up the prices and they have the authority to do so. And so this all fits together. The way to save democracy, this gets back to citizen action, is both to be prepared, to organize people to actually take on the threats, right? If there's an attempt to steal the 2026 election, right? The incredible civic involvement in blue cities that's happened with the ICE raids, where average people have mobilized and tracked ICE, followed them around, warned people they were coming, made it, and also just documented it so you could see masked men coming in and kidnapping mom and dad and grandma and grandpa, right, from there, leaving kids behind. So that kind of resistance. But the other part is, since Democrats are confident they'll win the election on affordability, that we actually have to promote things that will actually help people and actually make things more affordable. We'll actually raise wages. We'll actually make all the basics more affordable. And that means we can't just have these small technical fixes that are branding techniques that just sound good. They're talking points, but they're not going to move the ball. In fact, we just went through, if we can even understand the last couple years of history, Trump winning the presidency because of the perception that there'd been inflation and affordability problems under Joe Biden, right? And then he turned around and did nothing about it, has gone on all his adventures, and that's made him extremely unpopular. The Democrats will do the same thing if they run on talking points, promise affordability, and don't deliver it. So you talk about healthcare, you talk about utilities. You actually have to take on those monopolies and create new systems and be bold. And that's what both of those things need to happen. Affordability is a trap if we don't try to change the system and all the problems that helped produce the crisis in democracy in the first place, or even if we do get through the 2026 election. And that's not even necessarily going to be the case. So I just say that's what we're doing. What we're doing at Citizen Action is building support for bills in the legislature that would actually move the ball, that would actually be clear and understandable to voters so they can mobilize around it and be effective if implemented to give Democrats a mandate And frankly, the resistance there is from the Democrats who don't want to take those stands and want to not make commitments and want to read talking points and listen to political consultants who have no interest in governing, most of them. Their expertise, they're paid just to win elections, then worry about the next election, not to think about what democracy requires, Earl. And actually, we can get to this later, Earl. We went through the same thing in the Great Depression. And Franklin Delano Roosevelt faced the same crisis. And he solved it with the New Deal, which demonstrated that democracy could deliver for people. We're in the same kind of situation there with the added attack on the institutions of democracy.
So Dr. Craig, my head is spinning. As we enter into the second quarter of the 21st century, you just explained thoroughly what happened. As you stated, you and I lived through this transformation where, unbelievably, you used the figure $28,000 additional dollars. Can you imagine what $28,000 would do, Dr. Craig, to the average household that struggles in this society right now? And that $28,000 has been removed from many of these families, and people have been able to try to survive. But $28,000, I would say to you, Dr. Craig, would transform the lives of many American people if they had it today. It didn't happen overnight. It didn't happen in a vacuum, Dr. Craig. Many of us voted throughout all of those decades as we watched this happen. But I don't think, Dr. Craig, the American people had any idea of this nefarious plan that happened, even with Democrats knowing that this was taking place. You know, it's not going to change overnight, Dr. Craig. It took decades to put us in this situation. And like you said, if the Democrats win back to Congress, they're not going to flip on a switch and all of these things that have been done going to be undone. The suffering is going to go on for quite some time.
I think, though, Earl, where average people are living their lives, getting by, not studying, you know, what happened economically to average people from the 1970s until now. But there's a broad consensus, cross-partisan, that the economy is rigged against average people. But it leads to different reactions. Some get attracted by fake populism, by MAGA populism, that we're going to blame the immigrants. We're going to blame people right. of color, right? We're going to blame trans people, who you name it, right? They're very good at that. There's another group where we have building support for democratic socialists like Zora Mandani. Well, that's groups of young people who are saying we actually need to do something. But then you have other young people a lot who are walking away from the system and saying, I don't have a stake in democracy. It pox in all their houses. It's corrupt. I don't believe any of them. And there's grounds for that. That's not an irrational right. judgment based on their life experience, the life experience of their parents. And so but they do have a sense it's rigged, Earl. So there is a new politics that could address it, but it has to be clear. It can't be. I looked at November elections, there were big Democratic victories. In Virginia and New Jersey, moderate Democratic candidates won governorships, Mickey Sherrill and Abigail Spanberger. And then in New York with Zora Mandani winning the New York mayor's race. And they all three ran on affordability. But if you look at their platforms, Earl, they're distinctly different. The Spanberger and Sherrill platforms make bold declarations. I'm going to make healthcare affordable and utilities affordable and groceries affordable, right? And housing affordable. And then they list small technical fixes that don't really change the system. And I am telling you, I challenge any policy person to add them up and say how much they would affect people's lives, okay? Whereas Zoran Mandani, whatever you think of him, it's clear and crisp, and he is accountable. He is saying, I'm going to freeze all the rents. They have a rent regulation in New York, so they can do that. He says, I'm going to have a $30 minimum wage, okay, because they have the authority for local government cities to have minimum wages, as is true in a lot of places across the country, not in Wisconsin right now, which is a problem. He's going to where in food deserts where there are no grocery stores, get public grocery stores, right? He's going to have faster buses because they're really slow in New York with all the congestion, and he's going to make them free. So this is very conceptually clear, and to the extent he can accomplish it, there's a clear outcome people can see. And you don't see that with the Sheryl or Spamberger agendas at all. In fact, they're just hoping that people feel better 2 or 4 years later, and they get credit for it. They're not actually proposing things that would change the system. The system needs fundamental structural reform. So in Wisconsin, for example, we can go through a lot of policies that would do this in Wisconsin, Earl, but one thing that we are working on and pushing, and this is all public, the Wisconsin Ethics Board tracks people's lobbying. We're working with labor leaders to push for a $20 minimum wage. And there has been a conversation with most Democrats, and they haven't been reached yet in the legislature, state senate and state assembly, and most governor's candidates, and if they haven't been talked to yet, they will be. And, you know, it's not a done deal, Earl. There are a number of them that have inhibitions or worried about the politics of it, et cetera. I mean, and 20, by the way, 15 was the demand 10 years ago. It's now 20 with inflation, right, at minimum. In fact, the do you know that there's a statistic called the living wage, Earl, right? Yes. You often hear that up north in Wisconsin, it's cheaper, right? Well, there's a measure of what the living wage is, what it would require to actually be able to afford the basics in every county of Wisconsin. And for every county in Wisconsin, it's over $20 an hour. So we know that's what's necessary for work to pay so that you can at least, you know, feed yourself, have a roof over your head, et cetera, if you work full time.
You know, Dr. Craig, you talk about the minimum wage. In the state of Wisconsin, it's still $7.25. The highest minimum wage in the nation is $21 in the state of Washington. And so you would have to, you know, forgive me if I don't see the possibility of that becoming a reality in this nation, in this state, because, again, you know, unless, and even if Democrats do get in power, you know, the way democracy works, Dr. Craig, you can't wave a magic wand. You've got, you know, two different parties with two different views, and they've got to compromise. And so we can hope for a $20 an hour minimum wage, but we weren't very successful at 15 or 12. And so we're still at $7.25. These are all the kind of things, Dr. Craig, that when I talk with people who say this economy is rigged, and it absolutely is. You look at the Dow Jones, it's at 49,000. And 49,000, which means a handful of people in this country are becoming wealthy beyond their imaginations. Well, guess what? The Dow Jones is not the economy. And so for people who can look at the Dow Jones, Dr. Craig, and look at their bottom line continuing to move forward, they're all happy. But all of the people who don't have stock portfolios, what are we, chopped liver? We're voters. Are you saying to me, are people saying to us that we don't matter? Well, yeah, that's what they're saying. We don't matter. But how do we change that?
Well, I agree with you that past experience would teach that raising minimum wage is hard, right? But we're in a unique situation. Affordability is not just a current buzzword. It's a change in how people view the economy. It used to be that people thought job creation, economic growth, economic development, the stock market that you mentioned, that if that's going well, that helps them. People no longer think that. Affordability measures microeconomics, not macroeconomics. Like, is it affordable for me? So that changes the level of accountability. You no longer can point to how much growth there is in the economy because people don't believe that includes them, and they're right. So we're in a Democratic year because it's the second reelection and a midterm, independent of how popular Trump is. And Trump is obviously very far underwater. So this is considered to be a Democratic year and potentially a wave election, potentially the Democratic version of the 2010, maybe even better than 2018, but not guaranteed. It's just a possibility. In Wisconsin, you'd have to say that Democrats are favored in the governor's race because of that, and that they're favored in the state Senate because the maps line up better, though, but neither one's guaranteed. Okay, this is a battleground state. Assembly is harder because Governor Evers gave away power, which is nothing you should do in an authoritarian situation, and signed off on Robin Voss's maps instead of having the Supreme Court draw them. So the assembly is harder but possible. But if I was predicting, I would say the Democrats go win the governorship and the state Senate and narrowly lose the state assembly. That would be better if they won the state assembly, obviously. But if they win the state assembly, is it possible with enough public mobilization to get a $20 minimum wage when it's wildly popular and the kind of pressure you can put on if you with mobilized people, each legislator, it's hard but possible, I think. Now, let's say the Republicans hold the state assembly. Well, you have all the cards in a lot of ways, but you need to play it the way the Republicans have, which is to go for broke and to use their power. So they've been able to defund the public schools, defund mass transit, defund local governments with a Democratic governor. So obviously a Democratic Senate and governor together, if they were bold, could hold up the budget and put political pressure on Republicans to an immense level to have a state budget that included a $20 minimum wage and a number of other things. So if they would play hardball the way Republicans always play hardball in recent times. And so, but it requires more people to get involved. And it requires a lot of work, but we need to remake the Democratic Party to be a Democratic Party more like the New Deal, a Great Society Democratic Party that actually tried to deliver concretely for people and didn't go in with a defeatist attitude that that's just the way this is and we can't really do much. And, you know, we'll have a little tax credit that'll help people a little bit on healthcare, but we're not going to tackle the fact that health, hospital, pharmaceutical insurance monopolies are making something that is a right, absolutely unaffordable for average people. Even people with insurance are afraid to use it because they don't know what the co-pays, deductibles, and cost sharing is going to be. And it's going to be massive. And they're probably going to get surprise medical bills, and they're probably going to get claims denials that they don't expect.
Dr. Craig, you use the term if, and we need to remake the Democratic Party. That's a great notion. But it's easier said than done. If we have people who are running for office or people who are presently in office and they've been comfortable because they have not been in the majority and they're used to just being there, how do we then get them to understand the offensive side of things, right? My concern is that when you've been in the background for such a long time, you become complacent. So how do we remake that Democratic Party? We as the citizens, because that's the only way that can be remade.
It's not an intellectual argument in a coffee shop,
okay,
right? And whispering in the ear to be careful,
right?
By the way, they're an interest too, because they all need to be supported year after year. And that's where a lot of the campaign spending is going. You have to think the politics has changed, right? So you have to show facts on the ground. Politicians will react to political incentives. And so you have to have enough people knowing in an assembly district that there's a $20 minimum wage proposal and their state senator or assembly is not supporting it or is supporting it, right? All fighting Bob La Follette did to gain power in Wisconsin is he went around the state on speaking tours and he explained to voters the horrible corrupt votes that their state senator and state assembly people were taking, which they didn't know about, and they threw them out of office. It's harder now, elections are more expensive, but I'm saying in a way the basic elements of democracy are what they've always been. But I think it's possible, but we got to win. I mean, it's like saying that the Packers are unlikely to win or it's going to be a hard game. If you got a chance of winning, you've got to go and go for broke or you certainly won't win, right? But where we're stuck right now is we have a mandated two-party system, Earl. We're now a multi-party society. In fact, I would argue that the Democratic Party has more than one party in it. But the Democratic Party represents basically the pro-democracy forces. And with very few exceptions, and they're thrown out of the party when they reveal themselves, the Republicans are the anti-democracy party. And so we've got to make the pro-democracy party strong enough to save democracy. And that means actually delivering for people, not only resisting the authoritarianism, it also means fighting and using all the leverage you have. And we've gone through that with Chuck Schumer and with Tony Evers, dissatisfaction among the Democrat grassroots with leaders of the Democratic Party that won't fight, that will just say, there's nothing I can do, it's beyond my power. But Earl, in the early 1930s, you know, the Great Depression hit in 1929, okay, November of 29. So Herbert Hoover was less than a year into his administration. Herbert Hoover then refused to do anything that was necessary to address it. It got worse and worse. You know, food lines, people like in shanties living on the street, taken to the rails. It was terrible. And so when Franklin Delano Roosevelt was elected and authoritarianism was rising all over Europe, in other words, all the liberal democracies were failing with the Depression. It was a global depression. A lot of the top opinion leaders in the country told FDR that he needed to suspend Congress, that there's no way he could solve the problem, that democracy couldn't do it anymore. And he actually worried, because he decided not to do that, that by choosing to use Congress, he might be the last American president. And the great triumph of the New Deal is that he found a way to actually pass historic legislation, thing after thing that still survives, that actually started to resolve the Great Depression and convince people that democracy could work. That's the kind of thing that needs to happen again, Earl. But you almost have to go through a crisis to get there. I would say, and I think we said this off the air, not on the air, Earl, I would say as dangerous as the situation we're in now with, and we can talk about all the authoritarian crazy going on at the national level right now, as dangerous as it is, and high the chances are that we could lose democracy and have an authoritarian country, it may be the only way that we could open the system up enough to reform it and make it work for people. In a way, it's a huge opportunity, but it's also walking a tightrope. It's a huge threat, but it depends on people. This is all about people getting involved. And it's not about winning an argument because we have motivated reasoning. Reasoning only goes so far. People can come up with a reason to justify anything. Just listening to Donald Trump think out loud or Stephen Miller or any of those folks at the national level, you can see that reason does not get you there on its own.
So Dr. Craig, therein is the dilemma, I think, in all of this and what it is you are saying. When I hear your response to the questions, and we're going back to FDR and what happened and how the people were able to rally and support FDR and what he was doing. And then I think about today, and I think about the people of today, and I think about the technology, and I think about my generation and your generation, and my generation, baby boomers dying out, moving on, and it's a different world, a different time. And so with all the different technology that young people into, I don't know if enough of them really understand the magnitude of what is happening here. How do we wake them up? Because at the root of this, I think, is they're the ones we have to mobilize the most in order to realize this is their future. I mean, baby boomers, to be quite frank with you, they really can't hurt my generation as much as they, because we're blessed, we're fortunate, we're eligible for Medicare. So our health care issues aren't as difficult as young people are facing. Many of us have earned our pensions or we're towards the latter years of our lives. How do we mobilize young people, Dr. Craig, to understand this is their future?
By giving them something they can believe in.
Okay.
There has to be, and that has a clarity to it, that is not the branded politics that the Democratic Party has become too addicted to. The deeper polling on the Democratic Party and why it's as unpopular, even more unpopular than Donald Trump, is because people don't believe any of the promises that are made. They know they're just being lied to get a vote. They do.
Yeah, but Republicans do the exact same thing.
And so you talk about, there are a lot of young people, it's overstayed to some degree, in the manosphere, right? They're young 20-something disaffected males who are watching YouTube interview, you know, influencers who are carrying on about how men are the oppressed and white men are the oppressed class and women are getting ahead and so on and so forth,
right?
But there are a lot who aren't that. It gets overstated, like the whole group gets characterized that way, but it exists. Those folks feel like they have no way to get ahead, that they can't get the job that gives them kind of the resources and the prestige to land the relationship they want. They want to get married.
Right.
And so giving them a $20 minimum wage is very tangible. A lot of these folks are very angry that they can't even get a house or an apartment. They're living in their parents' basements. I mean, that's a cliche, but there's some truth to it, right? 20-something people. And so you've got to give them something real and make it clear which party is for it and which party is against it, so that you understand that in the governor's race, that the Democratic nominee will raise your wages dramatically so you can do what you want to do. And the Republican, maybe it's Tom Tiffany, is against that. And he's for the rigging of the economy. So there needs to be this conceptual clarity. But both of them are going to say, I'm going to deal with affordability. I mean, Robin Voss has announced that they're going to take on energy costs. There's no way in hell Robin Voss and the legislature are taking on energy costs. And we can get into that. And there's a Republican bill now to make sure the data centers, big tech and the big utilities
are regulated
through everyone, that they're going to make sure it doesn't affect ratepayers. You know what? Their legislation does nothing of the sort. But they're going to just message, but they can't do anything. Republicans aren't going to do anything other than support big tech and support the big utility monopolies. The Democrats, though, I mean, Governor Evers hasn't done anything on this matter. And that undermines democracy. I've said I want to be balanced with Evers. I was very proud of the governor when he went and paid all of the SNAP benefits before there was the final court decision, and he was one of the people Trump was threatening to take all the money back from. So that was the kind of boldness I'd like to see on a lot more issues from the governor. So, but credit where credit's due, and he certainly vetoed a lot of bad bills, but he also tended to concede to the inevitability of what's been going on, and that, of course, undermines democracy. That's my essential point.
So Dr. Craig, here you just, you know, pointed out, we've had a Democratic governor for the last two terms. Things haven't gotten progressively better for, you know, many in this state. It's not his burden alone. He didn't have control over the Senate or the legislature, so we understand why. But governor still has a lot of power individually that he can wield. We saw that with Scott Walker. But we didn't see that with Governor Evers solely. And so now we're saying we got to make sure that we get another Democrat in there, which I agree to. But, you know, they've got to have courage. They have to be able to say and do and make these rudimentary changes that are going to change the dynamic of the citizens and the people who vote for them. Part of the reason, I think, Dr. Craig, that we've got people who are so upset with the Democratic Party and they've made a decision, well, we're going to turn away from the Democratic Party, we're going to go to the Republicans because the Democrats have been making promises that they didn't deliver on. I would shake my head in the affirmative, but now they've gotten the other side of the coin. Are they happy with the other side of the coin? So where are they going to go? They've got to go. You have talked a long time about if ever there was a time for a third party, it would be now. But realistically, we know the powers that be and the money changers aren't going to allow that.
It's going to be the takeover of a current party. There's a mandated two-party system. I mean, the only party that went entirely out of business in American history was the Whig Party, but it was quickly replaced by the Republican Party, which remained the other party to the Democrat Party the rest of our history. The Progressive Party in the 1912 and in 1924 disappeared. It was more powerful in Wisconsin because of fighting Bob La Follette. But these parties have changed character dramatically over history. So they can change fundamentally. And that's what needs to happen. But look, I'm all for being realistic about power and where we are now. right? And understanding how much we could get in the next 2 years versus the next 10 years.
Right.
But showing people the path, okay? So yes, there were limits to what Governor Evers could do because we had a gerrymandered legislature. Remember, the attack on democracy, the gerrymandered legislature, Wisconsin didn't have a democracy until the last election, until 2024, because only one party could win the legislature, and that's our lawmaking body. I want to repeat, so he was put in a position of anti-democracy, undemocracy in Wisconsin. So he was not going to get a whole big platform, all of it through. Now, he could have stood more for those things, so it was clear who was against them, who was for them, right? I think that's something that's part of the governor's power's agenda setting, the bully pulpit, right? Whether they're eloquent or not, they just have a lot of access to the media and to people, right? And to getting notice. But maybe pick one thing that would be really good that they will never do to hold out the budget for, to hold on for and create a crisis over. Why? Because then it becomes clear who's stopping it. And if it's one thing, maybe you could get that. You can't get everything in a state budget. But he had no big bargain. He started out with a kind of milquetoast, watered-down series of small technical fixes in his state budget to begin with. So, for example, as we know, one of the reasons public education is totally underfunded, Earl, is because of special education. Special education is very expensive, and it's gotten more expensive. And one of the reasons is a very good reason. The victory of the disability rights movement in protecting and expanding the civil rights of people with disabilities. So disabled kids had access to more, right?
Yes.
Now the state, as the main funder of the bigger funder of public education, ought to fund that. They're paying, you know, only 30% of the cost and putting it on school districts that are already underfunded and therefore cutting the rest of education because of underfunding of special ed. All Evers got is 35%, but he had proposed something like 60%, but the voucher schools, while the conspiracy of public education, get 90%. I don't know why didn't he start with 90 or 100% that the state will do its job, right, to fund public schools and fully fund special education, rather than starting with a compromise. And you probably saw the press as to what ended up happening. This is why people walk away from government. The Republicans touted and Evers touted, it's going to be 45% now. By the way, we're talking about a very small subset of people connected enough to know that's an increase in special ed funding, or that special ed funding is funded different than the rest of public schools, or who funds public schools at all, okay? But they come out and tout 45%. This is the technical stuff that destroys democracy. It was not some sufficient, it was some certain, using the bureaucratic budget language of the state of Wisconsin. So some sufficient would be the government would make sure they paid 45% no matter what, state government. It was some certain, which meant if it cost more, it would be less. So it turns out it's 35%, not 45%, Earl, which was headlines a couple weeks ago. This stuff's mind-numbing and undermines anyone, any parent who's really attached to it and involved in their schools. It makes them throw their hands up and say a pox on both houses.
You know, Dr. Craig, the frustrations that I think the everyday citizen feels, the inner workings of state government, local government, all government, is when people are struggling daily to put food on the table, Dr. Craig, and to keep the lights on and to keep clothing on the backs of their children. The how local government works, how state government works, how the federal government works, you almost have to be, you know, like Dr. Craig, who has a PhD in those things. But the average everyday citizen doesn't understand those things. They're struggling. They're struggling every morning to make sure there's food on the table. You know, I volunteer my time in a couple schools two times a week in Milwaukee, and I talk with young people who clearly, Dr. Craig, don't have a snowball's chance in hell of making it in this supposedly the greatest nation on earth in 2026, right? And their parents are struggling. They don't know. The young person comes to school in the morning, Dr. Craig, with an address by the time they go home in the afternoon, that address has changed. They're transients. And yet these things are impacting and affecting them. They impact and affect the schools and why kids can't be educated. And yet we can't get the answers on the state level that can change all of that. And yet the people, how do the people then, Dr. Craig, understand the inner workings of that? Where do you learn about government? Well, for the most part, we're supposed to be taught those things in the school system. You know, and but that's not happening. So people are out here on a limb, Dr. Craig. Somebody comes, knocks on the door and says, a chicken in every pot. I'm going to do this for you. And so people, you know, do that, and there's no follow-up. So if we don't follow up on the people that we elect, Dr. Craig, to make sure they do the things that they said they were going to do, we get what we have now. But people aren't in a position to follow up because they're struggling so mightily today just to survive. Those two things just don't work well together. And I think it's part of the reason, Dr. Craig, why people have dropped out of this whole political system.
It absolutely is, Earl. And the part that elected leaders and civil society groups like the group I lead, CISNational Wisconsin, can do is to fight the complexity of government. Making it complex and complicated is deeply disempowering a Democrat. And so I think what elected leaders need to do is, and you see this with Zoran Mondani, he announces outcomes that he is going to try to achieve. He says universal child care. He says free buses. He says freeze the rent.
And people and people laugh at him.
Well, they try to, but that's partly from the elites and the establishment. Right. He's laughing all the way to the youngest mayor in 100 years in New York, and Donald Trump being fearful of having a public fight with him and treating him well when he visited the White House, which was a bizarre set of circumstances. But when you have a candidate, I mean, I'm just going to say, when a candidate comes to you and says, I have an affordability package, and okay, what are you going to make affordable exactly? And how much more affordable it would be if it doesn't have that, right? Then they're BSing you. Then there's no accountability. They're all for apple pie and Chevrolet and baseball, right? It's like the old commercial. Yes. So you gotta say, did they really say something to me that's concrete and I know what it would be? Like, I'm going to give universal childcare because, you know, you have a lot of young parents who, my God, that we're now demanding through a very harsh, you know, social service regime now coming from Republicans and some Democrat, that you have to prove you worked. But then, well, how do you take care of your kid? Are you supposed to have, you know, is it supposed to be child abuse? So it's very clear, since everyone needs to work, you don't really have the salaries to support, you know, the old 1950s household, right? That childcare has become something that's an essential and a basic, and it's walked away from. But you want to be clear about what you're delivering. Same with healthcare, right? You can do that very clearly on healthcare. You can do that very clearly on a $20 minimum wage, and so on. And so that is what needs to happen. But it requires the courage to actually talk about what outcome you are promising, and then to fight like hell to deliver it and be judged based on that outcome. They don't care about, I did my best. There's nothing I could do. I didn't have the legislature. Well, you know, there's a filibuster, so you have to understand. I'm talking about the national level. They don't care about that anymore. You have this position of power and you need to deliver, right? Do we care about all the excuses of the head coach of the Packers or the manager of the Brewers about their excuses? We want to hear how they're going to deliver, right? And what went wrong and how they're going to fix it and how they're and what they're going to do to build a winner.
You know, Dr. Craig, I am one who, you know, says to elected officials that I've voted for and supported over the decades, when I hear them say, we can't do anything, we're outnumbered, you know, at the legislature. Well, what can we do? We're outnumbered at the state senate. Well, we're outnumbered. What do you expect me to do? Well, I expect you to fight. And so if your response to me is you're outnumbered and so you can't get anything done, Dr. Craig, you're the wrong person for that seat. Am I correct, sir? The answer can't be, there's nothing I can do. If there's nothing you can do, we need to move on from you. You have to be willing to fight. This is a battle. And so if you're outnumbered, then you need to have more oomph in what it is you are saying and believing, and understanding that this isn't about you. It's about all the constituents who you represent, who you should know the pain that they're going through. And so you need to have that in your belly, in your constitution, when you go and on, you know, at the state level or the federal level, wherever it is, and be willing to fight for those people. If you are not, if you're at the point where, you know, you've gotten worn down, then Dr. Craig, I'm sorry. It's time to move on.
So did you ever see the movie, not the series, the movie Friday Night Lights?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So it's an old enough movie. I'm not going to worry that much about a spoiler alert. But the team in the final, the team from Odessa, right, faces a much bigger, stronger, more talented team,
right?
And they're killing everyone in the championship. And they fight like hell, and they come within inches of winning. They lose. That's a spoiler alert, right? But they wouldn't have had a movie if they just capitulated and lost by 40 points, right?
Right.
So I'm not saying that elected officials always have to succeed. I mean, they need to be clear on what they're trying to accomplish, and they need to be seen as fighting like hell. And here's the – democracy works when they know what you fought for, and they wanted it, and they know who stopped it. If you, the Marquette poll doesn't ask questions this way, but do you think – voters, even let's just take the most educated voters. Let's just poll voters that actually read the newspaper every day, right? So, you know, Wisconsin Public Radio listeners, et cetera, right?
Right,
and ask
right.
them, do they know exactly what the Republicans stopped that Tony Evers was trying to do? And do you know, Earl?
No.
Is there conceptual clarity as to what he was trying to deliver in concrete, tangible terms? Don't give me the name, the branded name of a program that he was for, right? Like a clean energy plan, whatever that means, right? I mean, I know what was in that
right.
plan, but no voter does. And actually, it didn't hold the governor accountable to much of anything until 2050, in my opinion. But the point being, when you hear these branded things and it's sort of like this, Earl, an auto metaphor. We don't need to tinker with the timing of the carburetor in the old car.
Right.
We absolutely need a new carburetor and maybe a new engine in the car. Maybe we need to retrofit the whole car, okay? But you're going to go tinker and change the spark belt arrangement, the spark plug arrangement around. That isn't going to do it. The car isn't working.
You know, Dr. Craig, when we talk about Governor Evers, Governor Evers was a guy who was in education, the Secretary of Education in the state for a long time. He wasn't exactly a political animal. He wasn't a guy who was in the fight, understood the inner workings of the state, all those kind of things. How important is it that the next person that, you know, wins that seat understands the inner workings of state government, has been engaged and involved politically? Where does that, the weight, gravity of that matter when we're talking about who we should vote for?
I mean, we're just in the era of consequences, Earl.
Okay.
Right. I mean, that's it. I actually think that you don't have to wait and see if, I mean, for the most active group of people, remember I said in a previous podcast, Earl, that the international research is that if 3.5% of people actively protest and resist a government, an authoritarian government, none has survived under those conditions. So we don't need absolutely everyone, right? But we need a critical mass of, that's millions of people, right? But that's not absolutely everyone that you know, right? And there are people who aren't going to be involved. But that also relates to making democracy work and deliver. So the blocking and tackling now is go to if there's a contested state assembly or state senate race in your district, go to the debate, go to governor's forums. You know, the governor's candidates are going around and speaking everywhere in small forums, or better yet, join a group like CIS National Wisconsin that will engage you directly in that work. And it's our work now that affects how candidates for governor are going to run, or state legislature and Senate, and which ones win those primaries. And so this is the thing. Right now we have to deal with the making it clear that we need candidates who will fight, that understand that we need to fight to save democracy, to prevent the authoritarian attack, but we also need to make democracy deliver for people and actually address the healthcare cost crisis, energy cost crisis, grocery, housing, all the rest, childcare, you name it, Earl. But we don't need everyone, but we need everyone. I mean, obviously, I think the people listening to your podcast, Earl, are an active group of people already, right. But let's get focused, right, on what is needed to actually make give people a stake in democracy. If we produce better candidates than a lot of the folks you're concerned that will see no stake in democracy, there's more of a chance that a lot of them will, that more of them will. And that's a process over time.
Let me ask you, Dr. Craig, your group, Citizen Action, certainly should we be cultivating leaders? Should we be looking not just for people who decide that I want to run for office? Should we be looking at people who may have what it takes and maybe just need a nudge? Should we be cultivating new leadership, people who have that in them? Let's be honest. Government on the state level does not pay the bills. So if a person wants to become a state senator or a state legislator, that it really is not going to feed the family. And so you get a chance to do those kinds of things. So sometimes the best amongst us aren't willing to even get engaged in that because financially it's just not worth it.
Well, I think we're one of the 9 full-time state legislators, Earl, that gets a full-time salary, and you get good health care for free. You get a pension. But, you know, a state senator makes around $60,000. Yeah, there are a lot of people who think they can make more than that, but that's way above the median, you know, income in the state, right?
Okay.
I think people need to move up step by step, generally speaking, unless you're extremely talented or privileged. That is, and this is like, these are jobs, they're side jobs. Run for school board, run for county board. Run for village board. And then people move up step by step and become the people who run for state assembly, or state senate, and then eventually governor, or U.S. senator. But they're more effective if they work with organized groups. And a lot of people don't realize that. If you just go and try to change the system as a lone wolf, I'm going to go and fix the schools, but I'm just by myself, you're not going to get much done. You're probably going to become captive to the system, or you're going to become jaded and disillusioned to walk away. So work with the teachers union, work with educational advocates like Wisconsin Public Education Network. In other words, that's where the power is, where they need allies on the inside, and you need boots on the ground and people who understand the policy and are pushing in the same direction across the state, because you're not going to fix just one school district. They're all tied together.
You know, Dr. Craig, the reason that I am so enamored with you and Citizen Action is, even in the darkest of times, you're still optimistic. And I understand how people can feel defeated. And if every morning they wake up and they see this insanity on a national level, that you can't even get your mind wrapped around some of the things that are being talked about right now in this country and possibly coming to fruition. And yet, you know, Dr. Craig and Citizen Action is always looking at it from a practical standpoint. We got to battle it. We've got to fight it. We can't give in.
No, that's it. Right, democracy, you know, government in the public interest, they were all hard earned by previous generations, Earl. And as you know, hard earned by people who were excluded from the original American experiment, like what Black folks did to end slavery and then ultimately to end Jim Crow, for example. And then we know in the Civil Rights Movement, a lot of other groups were inspired by by the civil rights movement to push new civil rights movements or you know to reach higher. So we got to remember that that it'd be nice if we could just say everything's fine and we can set our laurels. You know, human evil is part of the human experience, Earl. And furthermore, human groups that are not groups that are cause-driven, right? Something like the Hospital Association or the Edison Institute, which represents for-profit utilities around the country, right? But not just them. They act in their own interests, period. So you have to deal with that. The only way to challenge that is people who want to, you know, actually do the right thing, want to create justice, want to create opportunity and true equality, and they have to fight for it because they're always going to be the greedy people who want more. And be, and so we just need to realize that there is no end to the struggle. If there's an end to the struggle, then that's when we get into a situation like this. But I focus more, Earl, on our side rather than their side. We know what their side's about, right? I mean, we can't control the fact that the headline that just came out when we were recording, Earl, is, we'll see if this goes anywhere or not, U.S. seizes a Russian tanker that fled a Venezuela blockade. So there you go. But we're going to go all like pre-World War I here. But we can't control that. But we can control whether the opposition is the kind of opposition that can protect democracy and then rebuild it. My audience, the audience of our organization, is all the people who want to have a democracy and want to have a society where there is truly equal opportunity and justice for all. But we need more people fighting with us to do that.
You know, Dr. Craig, it's why I enjoy having dialogue with you so much. There are times, I'll be honest with you, I get deflated. You know, because I look at what is transpiring. I look at the homeless people in the wealthiest nation on earth. I look at children in the schools that I go and volunteer my time in who aren't being educated, who really are sacrificial lambs. And yet the Dow Jones is at 49,000. And there's no connection between, yet we're all Americans. And so I get frustrated with that, but you always add balance to it. And, you know,
it's probably a bubble and half of the increase is AI.
We know it's a bubble.
There isn't the profit behind it. And then they'll turn around and say, they're all too big to fail, need to be bailed out. So we, you know,
and we'll get bailed out.
So when I say our situation is better than the heart of the Great Depression under Hoover, we'll see. I mean, it'd be good to get control and avert that. But at this point, you don't have a responsible elite in this country. You have an elite that is going to destroy their own prosperity and its
yeah, but we go along with it, Dr. Craig. If they destroy their own prosperity, they destroy us.
Right. And then they'll turn around and say it's someone else's fault, that it's immigrants' fault, that's Black people's fault,
right,
et cetera. Trans people's fault somehow, some way.
Well, Dr. Craig, we've got to leave it there. And, man, I just love our conversations. They get better every week. We've been at this, you and I, a long time, but, you know, still fresh and you make me feel better.
Good. I'm glad because we need to take care of ourselves and come resilient in all of this and be ready. It's going to take a while.
Yeah. I mean, so
there are a lot of folks who are permanently committed to this kind of politics, you know, the followers of MAGA. It's become at the level of social identity, which means that it takes a long time to change.
So Dr. Craig, we'll leave it there. Happy New Year to you. Citizen Action and the work that you do highlight it because, man, we need to know that there's an army of people who haven't given up. Dr. Robert Craig of Citizen Action, see you next time, my friend, on What's Going On with Earl Ingram.